woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
I found... Well, welcome back to Stash Night. Maybe I can't hear the go, but I don't have my headphones on.
Just that would make sense.
That would make sense. I'm hearing... good thing you're close. I'm sitting here looking at the... Why I'm not getting a NASDAQ feed on my machine just yet. But I'm not. S&P futures are up $1.50, NASDAQ up 375, Dow futures up 17, so we're creeping here. Kevin, how are you?
Good. Hey, just some advice, a few things. Headsets work better when you put them over your ears.
Yes, they do.
Computers work better when you plug them in. Anything else I can help you with?
We're going to talk a little bit about, Maddie, tell me if I should or shouldn't. I'm finally going to tell a story about the money that was, embezzled out of PTI years ago. Because the trail has finally ended, Kevin. I finally gave up on tracking it down, right? Could we, was it... Long story short, don't tell it, I know. But we had a client that I'm still convinced it was an inside job, but sent us a whole bunch of emails back and forth regarding... After he had told us he was retiring and spreading cash out to his family and blah, 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 we got some emails to send, back and forth kind of emails, not just one, to send money to a couple of people that we sort of assumed, because we talked on the phone with the guy, they were like his sisters, so we did. And, of course, then the story was it wasn't him, right, even though the back and forth went to his email address, probably 25 times. It wasn't one call where we stupidly just sent money to the wrong place. Maybe we would never do that. Of course, now we don't do any sort of third money, but this is 4 years ago or so. And, of course we paid the guy because it was, I guess we should have done things better. But, in fact, I'm still to this day convinced that his sleazeball son was involved. Plus the guy was I offered to pay for somebody to do a deep dive in his computer and find out where all these emails came from. And he told me, no, he was a computer expert and that wasn't needed, that he had checked it out. And I go, okay, if you're a computer expert, how do you have your password sitting right on a machine or wherever you did? Long story. But bottom line is, the guy's a sleazeball, but we paid. And it ended up being like $100,000, which isn't, not the end of the world, but everybody knows I'm a kind of a right and wrong kind of guy and the son of an Irish cop, so this, of course, absolutely frosts me. So the weird part of it was, Kevin, and you know most of the story, is we caught it while it was still going on. So we're actually still getting emails. So I foolishly, at the time I was more naive, figured, boy, we got this red-handed. Somebody might actually give a crap, like law enforcement. Like, this is the guy's from Dallas. So I called the Texas State Police, or Texas Rangers, after I'd watched, what was the show the night before, the karate guy to go out and get everybody? What's his name, the little redheaded guy? Mr. Karate Dude?
Chuck Norris.
Well, yeah, I forgot the name of the show. The lady says to me, what are you calling us for? That literally was the response. And, so I called the Dallas police, because the guy lives in Dallas. What are you calling us for? But the lady was nice enough to give me the number of the Secret Service, which evidently, allegedly, goes after stuff like this. Now, mind you, while I'm on the phone, we're still getting emails from the guy, because we ended up catching the third wire and never sent it. Like, so there were three and we only sent out two. And we were quick enough to realize that something was wrong on the third one. So she gives me the number to Secret Service. So I call some guy in the Secret Service and he goes, well, normally we have $1 million minimum on this stuff, but since this thing is still live, if you send me like all this stuff, right, real quick, we might actually do something. This is exactly the conversation. So of course I work like basically through the night, every single email, AP address, you name it, we send this guy this bound booklet like the Federal Express the next day. Because, man, I never saw anybody work so fast, you know. I'll run it by my superiors. So we don't hear from him for like 2 days. Finally email him and he goes, nah, they decided not to do anything. I'm like, okay then. The Chicago police said, well, it's in Texas. Why should we take care of it? So basically there was nowhere to go. We met, an attorney friend of mine met with the Department of Justice here in Chicago. Because this is right after the Paris attack, right? So which was allegedly cost $10,000 and how many people got killed? So we meet with like six of these bleeps, all in their, you know, these are our heroes, right? All in their very suits, ties, sit there. I give them all a ring bounder. I mean, I basically did all the work. So just here they are, here where the money went. And we'll let you know if we look at it. Actually, no. They said, thank you very much. And I said, well, says, don't ever call us. This is what the next thing I said. Don't ever call us regarding progress. Or if we even decided to investigate it, because we will never tell you. And I said, well, how do I know, like, you know, whether he actually did something or not? He goes, well, if it's like 2 years from now and you don't see anything in the paper, you can assume that we never took the case. That was the last I heard of those guys. This is verbatim truth.
This just sounds like such an incredible load of crap.
Yeah, this is verbatim truth. So it turns out, now, for all of you that are concerned about your money going to, you know, anytime you go to the bank, I mean, somebody's got their eye on what you're doing. The money goes to two ladies. Now, two ladies allegedly, whoever was involved, one of them I think was somewhat involved, but the other one was just, it was in Facebook, and she's this lonely lady in Alabama or someplace. And she never had more than, I ended up getting all her checking records. She never had more than like $800 in her checking account. Well, I mean, she had a Social Security check, and then she'd pay it right out there, her mortgage and stuff. So she never had more than like $1,500 in her checking account. All of a sudden a check flies in there like $45,000. Nobody bats an eyelash. The next day she goes down and gets cash money, not a money order, cash money for $22,000. You know, drives to the local Walmart. They take the cash and send it to Egypt. Somebody in Egypt, right? I know I'm not going to track this money down, right? The next day, she goes and gets $21,000, goes to the same Walmart, cash money, tracks it to Egypt. Now, I know ladies that worked at the Ceres whose family was in Romania, where they saved up money to send to their, you know, the family for Christmas, and walked into a Western Union with like $4,000 or $5,000 that they had saved up. This is going to be holiday money for the whole family. And Western Union basically kicked them out the door and said, well, we can't take that. Well, here's a lady with $22,000 goes into the Walmart. But this, it gets better. The guy, whoever stole the dough, is bitching at her that there's still like $800 left in the account and he wants the whole $800, right? Not even a piece for her. So she gets the $800, she goes to the Walmart, they say, no, we've put a flag on you. We can't send the $800. Because obviously somebody was watching it, the two. She gets in the car, drives to the next town Walmart and sends it. This is your,
when Walmart flags you, you would think that would go into the Walmart database everywhere.
Yeah, and so at one point we end up dropping a suit on people, and Walmart was one of the people. And they walked in, it was in federal court, and they said, well, our share isn't $75,000, which evidently is the minimum in federal court, even though the whole thing was more than $75,000. And the judge just lets them out. So they're impervious to the legal system, too. Instead of the judge looking at it and saying, wait a minute, how could you guys do this? They say, oh, no, it's under $75,000. Okay, you're out. All right, so fast forward. I want to give a whole story. But some of the checks stayed here, right? So finally, I end up in New York court because the New York police want to know part of it. And this guy's got a shell company, and there's a shell company in Brooklyn, which, of course, you go to serve them. There's nobody there, even though they're registered. They got a bank account, all this kind of stuff. So evidently you can, in New York, you can actually serve people at the Secretary of State if they, if they're going, because the corporation's still alive, right? And there's a couple other guys that got the checks. So we, trying to get out of Chase who exactly these people are, and by the way, there's still money left in their account, was probably a 2.5 year ordeal. Even though, you know, it was total fraud. So finally, now I've finally given up because the accounts have been dormant for 2 years. But they had, they send me like 1,800 pages of stuff from this, this corporation's account, money flying in and out. Kevin, it's an absolute joke. There's 500, 800, 1,000, 1,500, all flying back and forth in like postal money orders and stuff. So the first like 20 of them, guess what the name is on all the money orders and like they're flying back and forth.
It's like ATI Security.
Close. It's like Addis NGO. And I'm like, who the hell is Addis NGO? It turns out it's a rock band. So then I go to the next, like, 20 pages. Same thing. Money orders flying back and forth, cash. And it, the name on it is Mona Easy. Is that like pat my thigh or what?
Sounds like a stripper.
Yeah, I'm like, it sounds like a fake. How does somebody not say? Not, I mean, this is our law. This is our heroes at work. They don't do anything, Kevin. They want no part. And I have a client. We have PTI as a client. And I was over at his place, and he said somebody stole $1,000,001 out of one of their accounts. You know, by just stealing the password or doing something, and managed to move the money out. And guess what the FBI told him? We don't look for under $1,500,000. So whatever your number is, they don't look unless it's over that number.
Whatever your number is, it's just under the minimum.
Just under the minimum. And this is, I mean, I, you know, individually, I mean, I know an awful lot of policemen and some people.
But if the conversation go like this, what's the minimum for this? If you asked, and the answer is, what's your number?
Well, I mean, it is so incredible that we're talking about. This is when all the terror attacks in the cities were happening in Europe, and they're saying how cheap it was to do one. This is $45,000 going to Egypt on cash money from some lady in where was she from? Somewhere in Alabama, and nobody even cares. Kevin. They don't even care. And yet, anytime you go into a bank or Elliot Spitzer or somebody they don't like, they can bring all this to bear on you in a nanosecond. Even Dennis Hastert, what he was. He was under 10. I mean, if the banks have a reporting requirement of $10,000 to say that if that transaction, they got to, you know, fill it out and drop it to the government. I don't know if I want to agree with that or not, but okay, that's, I guess that's okay. When does it become a breaking the law for you to do 9,000 5 days in a row? How does that become like a felony? All you're doing is moving your money in and out for mostly good reasons, I think. Maybe not. I don't have a problem with anybody investigating, but the other ones, how does that become a crime? You're getting around a regulation? How does getting around a regulation, essentially legally, I mean, how many other people do you see? Now, compare that to the tax people overseas paying 5%. That's not getting around a regulation? Since when is that a... Since then is that a problem? These drug companies, all these other people, Microsoft, all these people had stuff overseas and paid no taxes. That's not getting around a regulation? And yet if you get around the bank reporting requirements, it's like a felony? I mean, Kevin, we need
a... Let's talk about something else as it relates to this minimum stuff. And that is, if there is a minimum, you can bet your bottom dollar, which you probably it could be.
Yeah.
But you can bet that the criminals know what the minimum is.
Oh, without a doubt.
They know how to stay under it.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And so one of the things, and I knew this from, you know, from the days of signature verifications in the banking business, is, you know, you couldn't check. Now, the bank is legally required to check the signature on every check. I mean, that's technically speaking, that's what the legal requirement is. Of course, you can't check the signature on every check. So it, it becomes a risk assessment, and so you set yourself a number and say, well, I'm only going to check the signatures on checks that are 5,000 and over, or 10,000 and over, whatever the number is. And now, you know, signature verification is automated, so it can kick out the suspects for you and make it much easier. But back in those days, you know, you had to outsource just a certain amount. Well, the important thing to do was to make that a moving target. So on the days when you had, you know, lighter volume, you might bounce it down to 500 from 5,000 and spend the time to look at them, because anybody who is running a fraud, especially if they're running it over a period of time, is going to figure out what your minimum is, and they're going to stay under it, and you need to move that down to something that is that falls, you know, that's going to catch it, that's going to trigger it again and make you look further. So, you know, that's one of the things that they're not doing here, is if they're setting a minimum, they're guaranteeing a wave of crime that relates to that stays under that. And then, you know, maybe there's somebody out there who can go for the big kill and take millions and millions of dollars all at once and get the hell out of Dodge. But for the most part, the garden variety criminals, it has to be a moving target for them, otherwise you'll never catch them. So, you know, that was one of the ways that your case should have fit in there, is to say this is a perfect opportunity. Because the other question I'd have is, if you have one person pulling a scam, trying to run a scam against PTI Securities, you know, where else are they trying to run the scam?
Well, yeah, that's right. And there isn't any place.
And so if you catch them in one place, you're probably going to catch many more just like it.
Well, I have a friend in Indiana, and I think a lot of people now, maybe you don't even know this, but you probably do, but your credit card has sort of morphed into not just using it to go to, you know, buy gas and buy dinners and so forth. It's sort of morphed into like an eternal line of credit, right, Kevin? So, I mean, if you've got a $15,000 limit, they're constantly sending you stuff like, why aren't you using it? Use it for this, that, and the other thing. I mean, they don't really care if you're buying something anymore. It's not just a cash substitute when you're out. So they will look at, you know, they'll expect, they don't mind you buying a car on it, basically. So you can move it anytime you want. You know, just by going to your the online thing and just sending it someplace. Well, one of the ladies in Indiana was telling me that somebody essentially accessed her line of credit and borrowed $15,000, and the money's gone. And she opens up the statement. She's like, "I didn't do that." She goes, "I've never even used it," and they don't want to give her money back. They offered
her to give her money back.
They offered her $2,000. This has been going on for 6 months. Nobody will take the complaint, and it's too little for a lawyer to take it. It's only $15,000. I mean, it's incredible what has fallen through the cracks here for people, and she's basically powerless. The banks in Maryland, or whatever the credit card home is in Maryland, who knows where the bank is, and for everybody, this constant. This total incompetence and not willing to do your job, I think, is up and down virtually. I mean, everybody knows I have a soft spot for Chicago Police. I have Chicago Police plates. I think the people there are spectacular. I think the organization and the way the thing has been run for the last 20 years is an absolute embarrassment. The lack of coordination, the lack of electronic, being anywhere near in the 20th century, they're worse than me looking for a flip phone. I mean, I honestly think that they're nowhere, Kevin, and they're proud of it. I mean, how does the state police see a shooting with our friend's wife, see a shooting, engage a helicopter and all kinds of people, 100-mile-an-hour chase through the entire city, and all of a sudden the next day they let the two guys go to the wrong guys? How the hell does that happen?
Well, it's one thing they're the wrong guys. Letting them go isn't the cops. That's Kim Fox. You know, that's saying, well, we're not going to prosecute that because it's not a violent crime.
How does resisting arrest, going 100 miles an hour through city streets, endangering everybody, how is that not some sort of a problem?
Well, this is why the cops are so pissed about that part of it. But the other part of it is, you got the wrong one.
Yeah, how do you
for somebody, how do you get into a 100-mile-an-hour chase with the wrong person.
Yeah, I mean,
I get that it could happen easily, that you could identify the wrong car easily, but you know that just seems. I don't know how they identified them in the first place. So I guess I should. You know what? I'm going to back off of that. I'm going to say I don't know how they misidentified the car.
Well, the original story was the.
Sure, there was a way they could have.
The original story. Now, this is in the press, of course, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. The original story was the one squad that is in, from what my elves tell me, that the state police that patrol the expressways here assign one squad per expressway, per shift. And I'm going to say, Kevin, unequivocally, that's not enough. You think? So if somebody goes by you at 100 miles an hour and you got a do not chase mandate, which I think these people do have for speeding tickets, you don't want 120 mile an hour chases for it. There's nobody ahead to call and say, you know, red convertible coming at you 120 miles an hour, pull them over. There's no one to call. That's insanity, Kevin. That's insanity. People didn't do that kind of police work in the 50s, for God's sake. The idea is to get help, get support, and not be shooting anybody. Right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I'm getting this third hand. My father used to tell my mother, he died so young. You know, she goes, you don't do that. And if she told me, your father always told me, you only pull your gun to shoot it. If you pull it to point it at somebody or to threaten somebody or wave it around, it's nothing but trouble. You only pull it to shoot it. Now, in those days, the guys had a billy club, or you always had two guys in a squad. But now you don't. So people have their gun out, and all of a sudden somebody moves, and the thing goes off, and nobody intended anything, but all of a sudden somebody's dead and everybody's in trouble. I mean, it's not a shock to me.
Well, Tom, it's all part of reimagining policing. That's one of the buzzwords. We're going to reimagine how we do policing. Yeah, great job.
But anyway, I'm just saying, anybody who thinks that these people are working tirelessly for you, I went through every single law enforcement person there was, and basically everybody told me, don't call us. You know, and 100 grand's a lot of dough. I mean, you would think it is. And what did
I know I could have a really fun night out with it.
Yeah. And I went over to one of my local haunts. Actually, I went to the Bacchanalia's. It's a great Italian restaurant if you haven't been there in South Oakley. Because I knew there was a guy in there that I went to high school the same time I did. I didn't know him. That was actually in the business of... Here's a guy who went in the police force and he retired. He's kind of a character, but he realized that there was nobody on a police force that knew how to track down cyber crime. He goes, 95% of the officers wouldn't even know. If you get, like this happened to one of our producers, won't say which one, where the money got stolen out of their debit card in a bar because they had the little reading thing in there. He says, if you waved down a squad, they'd say, what are you talking to me for? Well, somebody just stole $1,000 from me. Meanwhile, if somebody stole it out of your wallet, then that's something they can deal with. If you call them, but they have no idea even what you're talking about. And yet, well, Maddie, what percentage of crimes now of money stolen is stolen online? Like 90%?
Easily, yeah.
And yet, 90% of the police force has no idea what even to do. Anyway, this guy sets up a consulting firm right near the jail at 26th Street, and so I was telling him this story, and he goes, "Oh, no, nobody's going to care." you beat yourself up. Nobody's going to care. Don't chase that stuff down. Nobody. You call me and say, "What are you calling me for?" Which is exactly what happened. And I
would imagine for you at some point, it was far less about the money and more about not wanting this SOB to get over on you.
Well, I thought. Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, how long have you known me? But I actually thought. Our losers, and it's not individually, collective losers in law enforcement, had gotten so sloppy that the thieves would have gotten just as sloppy, and they were still operating out of the same bank account, the same address. That they had not been caught in so long that they just decided that there's no way they're ever going to get caught, and that some guy like me who just kept plugging for 4 years might exactly catch him by surprise. But I was about 2 years late. If I could have got there within 2 years, they were still doing stuff back and forth out of the bank account. but I was absolutely stopped from doing that. We're still waiting for a subpoena in the New York court, and it's been 2 years. Finally, Chase said, okay, we'll take a lawyer's subpoena because they told him what happened. But, Chase has been refusing to give us this information now for pushing four and a half years. Now, I know you can't necessarily just give out money on people's accounts, but how is it took this time? We were in federal court here, and that's when Walmart got bowed out. The judge never once would give us a subpoena to find out if there was any money left in these accounts, and if there was, to freeze them. Because if you ever actually served them, they could have just taken the money out and closed them then and never showed up. I mean, this system is absolutely does not work for anybody who knows anything about it, Kevin. I mean, it's scary. I think. I mean,
yeah. What's the guy in Die Hard where you called him a petty thief, and he said, "No, I'm an exceptional thief."
Yeah.
if you know how the system works, you can get really good at it.
Anyway, real quick, I went to we got to go to the break real quick. But the guy who works in the locker room at the club asked me to, "Well, Chief, tell us out on your radio show how stupid these people are." And I go, "All right, well, the mask mandate that's now a week old back in Chicago has seen a precipitous drop in anybody doing anything inside these buildings, especially health clubs. I mean, nobody wants to wear a mask riding a bike inside when you can ride the bike outside." And the guy he was laid off totally for whatever how many months, and was back at 20 hours a week, which he's a real good guy. So even though I think that screws up your unemployment, he was actually doing it. Then it was 25 hours. Well, he finally got his full 40 hours. Now he's paranoid that this, he goes, "None of these guys want to wear these masks. They don't think they need to. Most of them already had it. What's going on? You should mention this." I already have. I mean, what it's, anyway, Kevin, we all know the story here. SP Futures down 150, NASDAQ Futures down 14. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 375. NASDAQ futures down 17. Individual stocks in the Dow. Every stock in the Dow. Oh, Dow's only down a point. Every stock that's open or trading pre-market. I wouldn't say, I keep saying open, but I guess when they're up here, I seem to think they're open, but they're actually not. Well, you can trade them, but they're not open on the exchanges yet. Everyone that I see is actually up. Goldman Sachs up 224 is the leading one here. As they've told everybody this morning that if you don't get the vaccine, you're out. I wish I was like 5 years old, Maddie, because if I was, I don't wish I was 5 years old, but, how many cards are you going to have to show now in their lifetime that you followed a policy of government? This vaccine card is just the first, right? We're thinking? I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell, as the Gestapo takes over. Yesterday, Dow was up 30, S&P futures up 6, NASDAQ futures up 77, NASDAQ a new record.
Is the government requiring that you show the vaccine card?
Your president has told every CEO to make it a requirement of their firm. I listened to him the other night.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of any government requiring it. A lot of private businesses requiring you show it.
At the direction of the government. Anyway, DAX down 34.2%, FTSE up 7.1%, kick around up 8. I think it was do the right thing or something along those lines.
But there's no law.
No, but I'm...
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Well, if you're going to get fired and they let you fire you because of that reason, then I guess it's a law. Or whatever, what are we just talking about? A move within the law. Now, what does that mean? If I fired you for not having a vaccine, can you take that to the state and say that it was an unlawful discharge after the president says make sure everybody has a card? How's that going to work?
I don't know.
Yeah, not very well. I think I got you thinking over there, which I always do. Nikkei down 7, call that flat after being all over the place. How can that thing only be up or down 7? Shanghai up 25.7%, Hang Seng down 34.1%. Actually, very quiet over in Asia after being up huge yesterday. Bonds up one more basis point to 1.30. We haven't seen a 1.3 number in a while. Bund minus 0.44. So that's a three tick, up move, even though it's still negative. Japan is positive 0.01. They're right there. They're about as, stuck there as you can be. Oil up 14 cents, but still 67.68, way below the 74 number we were at a while ago. Brent, it did make it back over 71, 71.33. Yesterday it's up 28 cents. Natural gas down 2 cents, 3.87. RBOB up a penny. 220. We've got gold, which has been pretty bullish, but now it's back under 1800, down $16, 1790. Silver down 17 cents, 2371. Copper up 2 cents, 428. And the last, Bitcoin down 641, 47,512. Below 50 here for, it was over 50 Monday morning, I believe. So it's down some. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one crash in the area, and it's kind of a big one on the Stevenson. Inbound side, just before Kingery Highway, there's a crash blocking the left lane with a reported fuel spill as well. Expect significant delays as crews are getting that cleaned up and out of the way, but that's causing some congestion on the Stevenson as you're heading. It's actually on the outbound side of the Stevenson. Just before Kingery. Everything else looking okay on the inbound side. No issues on the Ryan I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Eisenhower still pretty quiet. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. That, of course, will change here shortly, but off to a good start here in the 6:30 a.m. local time hour. Off the expressways, one crash to report. That's in the western suburbs. Robert T. Palmer Drive at Schiller Street. There is a crash, but everything else all quiet. Weather today, sunshine early, mild temperatures, and then we'll warm up this afternoon to reach a sunny and steamy high of 89. Right now it's clear and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 110 today. Right now it's clear and 82. In sports, White Sox snapped their three-game skid, beating up on the Blue Jays last night in Toronto 5-2. Cubs were postponed due to the evening storms we had here last night. They'll play a day-night doubleheader today at Wrigley. Game 1 at 1:20, and then Game 2, after they clear the ballpark, will be at 5:30 against the Rockies. Diamondbacks lost to the Pirates last night 4-2. Chief.
We had a bunch of those refugees in the Tripoli last night from the Cub game. All we're mentioning that the ticket for last night, instead of being a lost date and getting your money back, you have to use it tonight. And even if you have season tickets and you go to the afternoon game, you can't even just sit in your seat and have a hot dog and a beer and wait for them to, you know, take care of the field for the second game. You have to leave and come back. Could there be anything more screwed up in shall we say customer management than that?
If it gets rained out,
you have to realize that the afternoon people need to get out of there and make room for the throng of people that are dying to see the Cubs and the Rockies play.
But it's the same. If it's a skybox, it's the same people.
You can't get your money back after a rainout?
No.
Are you sure about that?
I've been telling you this all year. When the Tribune owned the company, and the Sox actually...
I know you don't get a rain check anymore, but I thought you either get the new date or you get your money back.
No, your ticket is now good for the rainout date.
Interesting.
Now, if they... I think like the Sox have done...
But you had the option.
Where they just had the... When I had the tickets, the deal was you lost the date. So tonight's game, your ticket really wasn't even any good. There was a way you could contact them and re-up for the ticket for tonight, but you lost the date. I could take my four tickets up to the window on like an off day, and they'd give me cash for my tickets because I lost the date. And I could get new tickets for another date if I wanted. But I mean, the idea that you have people from work in a skybox tonight and the same people are going to show up tomorrow night is so ignorant I can't even go there. Right? What if it was the afternoon game they made? You can't get the same business people there, right? I don't think so, unless they don't actually work.
You definitely could.
I have stuff to do during the day.
Yeah, there was
like most people.
Like most people have stuff to do during the day. So the Sox had already gone the other way, where they'll give you the makeup date, and that's when you have to use your ticket for. And the Cubs immediately, the Ricketts, embrace that. So they don't lose the date. Can you imagine if all of a sudden, there was some, I don't know what it was, a huge snowstorm or something, and there was, you know, the opera was sold, you didn't get to use the date, them giving you like an afternoon, like 6 months now, saying that's your new spot?
They do, I pulled up the Cubs website, they do have, for group outings, a rainout insurance that you can buy.
You can buy.
Right, so you can, and I don't see what the cost is here, I'd have to look into it deeper, but yeah, you're essentially right. So if you and a buddy buy two tickets and you get rained out, then your tickets are good for the makeup date, and that's it.
Yeah.
If you are doing a group like you gave an example of, let's say you're inviting 10 clients to go, or you have some sort of, you know, bachelor party that's going to be a specific day or weekend, if you don't buy this, you can buy this rainout insurance, and then you can get your money back. If a rainout happens, but if you don't buy that, then I guess you'd be on the hook for all those tickets.
But if you were foolish enough to have a skybox, and you had, you know, 10 clients or 20 clients, however many are in there, and all of a sudden they say, okay, we're rained out, we're playing tomorrow at 1:30. I mean, what do? You just eat the tickets.
Meaning you have the skybox as a season ticket?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Does anyone have, I guess some corporations have that, yeah.
Well, sure. Well, if you walk down the...
You get 81, down, yeah, you have 81 skyboxes, and it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you walk down Skybox Road, there's a name on just about all of them.
Right.
I mean, Mesro used to have one at, Sox Park. And they were, I went a couple times, and there was somebody at, I mean, everybody thinks that they,
you eat and drink for 3 hours at the skybox, though, during the rain out, so no one really cares.
well, yeah, unless they call it, like, you know, before it even goes.
Yeah, that's true.
But it actually, matter of fact, Jim Tyree's, one of his assistants during the summer, well, he had the four seats at the Bulls game on the court, you know, where you, basically the half court line was between the two sets of two we had, right? Because I was there one night, it was pretty neat. And the one of his assistants, that's all she did was manage that skybox. Because when you're paying that kind of money, you have to have, I mean, they use it 81 times. So you have to have all your salesmen, all your brokers, everybody, you have to have, give them a night or two, and they better get 15 people there. Otherwise, you're just wasting tickets. I mean, it is
they better fill it. Yep, yeah, you're darn right.
I mean, Skybox management, if you have the whole 81 games, is really tough. I mean, it's a big deal. And you better be a huge law firm that can, or accounting firm, where every partner gets the box like twice. And the list of people you bring better not be your drunken brother-in-law. It better be somebody who we want to bring to that. You know, it better be the guys that you're doing their income tax for, that you're trying to get the audit stuff at their firm. It better be guys that you're doing the audit stuff at their firm and you're trying to get their income. It better be some reason why that person's there, not just because you lost at golf to your brother-in-law and he wants free beer and the firm. And it's a big deal. Because one of my, I used to do my, I love this, Matty, and you're going to be jealous now. Kevin, not so much. Way back in the day in the 80s, my accountant was with, somebody, and one of the big, was it the Big Eight, Kevin, or the Big Six, whoever?
It was Dewey, Cheatham, and Howell.
Yeah, one of those places. So they had a membership at Butler, and every partner got. Now, how you pull this off when some of the partners were women, I have no idea. But every partner got two tea times a year. And I was this guy's guest twice. And I'll tell you, Butler is pretty friggin' neat. That course is spectacular. Just saying. Not that I, you know. And guess what, Matty? I broke 90.
Even better.
With a perilous 89.
I still broke 90.
Yeah, I was the last hole is an absolute bitch, right? So I was playing really well, and I'm feeling my oats. So I hit a pretty good drive, and I've got 200 yards left over water. This is back, you know, when the clubs were different, and the balls were a little different. So I pull out my tour, and I go, I'm gonna score this one. Hit a line drive right over this water, right onto this green. Well, it didn't quite make it. So I ended up with a double bogey at the last hole, and still got my 89. I had visions of like an 86, and that didn't happen. Just saying. But it's really something. Anyway, that's how they did it. But every partner got two tee times. So, I mean, it's a big deal. You know, it's a lot of money. So, anyway. Hey, Kevin, are you going to be a commissioner of the new, what are they going to call the College Professional Football League?
Well, it's just an alliance now, so we'll have to see what it winds up being. But, this appears to be leading us into basically they have 1A and 1AA. I guess we're going to go, division 1A, 1AA, 1AAA or something like that because, but really what's happening here, and let's fill in the blanks for the listeners who may not know this, is this has been on the works for a while, but the Big Ten, the SEC, or the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-10 announced that they are forming a athletic alliance, and what that means is there's not a lot of detail on this that's been published, but what it really means is they are worried this like crazy about the SEC, which has gotten really big and has all of the dominant or has a disproportionate share of the dominant football teams. And so they are trying to put together their joint response to the SEC by forming their own alliance. And what they're basically going to do is they're going to just play amongst themselves. And more than anything else, I think that's where it's going, is that you will see those teams scheduling their non-conference games against each other. You will see them staging basketball events. And that little note that they had in the announcement was not just before the conference season start, but during the, you know, in the middle of the season, they'll have some events. And I think this will all shake itself out into probably a, 50 to 60 team, kind of super conference of college football programs eventually. But in the short run, I think it's those schools are going to be I think they're looking to freeze out the SEC out of a lot of big events, and not let the SEC get too big, or too popular.
Well, is Texas in a?
They'll be able to set up their own bowl arrangements. You know, they'll be able to do a whole lot of stuff that tends to freeze out the SEC. And I think that's their goal, is to say, SEC, we need to rein you in a little bit.
Well, just in some detail that kind of would let us know where this is heading, have Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC, right?
Correct.
All right, so have they canceled games with other people, or is the join up after the next 4 or 5 years of schedule plays out, or
it's after?
They either have to buy their way out of their agreement, because they're stuck in the Big 12 for a few more years. And the reason they're stuck in the Big 12 isn't that they can't leave. It's that, and you may remember, we talked about this back in the days when the conferences were doing their last round of realignment several years ago. The Big 12 has a part of their league agreement is called a grant of rights agreement. And what that means is it doesn't matter where Texas goes, the Big 12 owns the rights to owns their broadcast rights. Until the end of their term, which is, I forget, it's like 2024 or something like that. So, you know, they can say, go join the SEC, but guess what? Your home games are still part of our TV contract, and is still part of the conference. And by the way, you're not part of the conference, so you don't get a distribution share of the revenue. So that, you know, that was how they locked in their teams when it looked like the Big 12 was going to fall apart several years ago.
I don't expect you to have all the details.
So they'll probably negotiate their way out of that, I would imagine. Where does that leave the Big 12 is kind of an interesting thing, because especially now with this new alliance that does not include the Big 12, what's going to happen? You know, are there football powers left in the Big 12 that matter a lot to anybody? Well, you know, Baylor's pretty good, but I don't think they're, I don't think people care that much about it. TCU's theirs, isn't it?
Well, you got Colorado, you got Missouri.
There are some decent football programs, but the basketball programs, Baylor and Kansas, they're going to need to find a new home.
All right, so
they are not going to survive outside of this.
Back up. Let's back up here. We've reported on this show, not recently, by the way. When I say recently, not in the last couple of years, that according to most people's, the published profitability of college football, even though I disputed it at the time because I went through the Notre Dame money and I thought they made more money, because they didn't count stuff. I don't think they counted stuff like contributions to the school you needed to get in the ticket pool, that kind of stuff. Well, hands down, I mean, I don't know, maybe you can Google this, I don't know who is there now, but hands down, Texas made more money than any other team. Without question, according to this study. Matter of fact,
Texas is wildly profitable. Texas does make a lot of revenue, but if you're looking at the data, because this keeps coming up, this comes up on a regular basis, if you are looking at the data just from the Title IX reports, which is the information that's publicly available, you're going to get the wrong idea, because for Title IX reporting, you only have to report the expense side. They're gathering data on the expense side, but they put in their reporting space that you can put down what the revenue is. And some schools report the revenue accurately. Some just plug a number in there. So, for instance, and I remember looking at this a few years ago when the Big East was still around, and just looking at Big East basketball. And like half of the conference had the same revenue for basketball as expenses to the dollar. Now, for any one to have that happen would be a real phenomenon. For half of the conference to have it to the dollar, it just says they don't care about that. They're not bothering to report on that. They don't want to bother with it. So they've just said, just plug in the same number for revenue as we have for expenses. Now, expenses, on the other hand, that is something that they want to track for Title IX purposes. so you can figure the accounting might be a little bit different from school to school, but the expenses are, by and large, a pretty accurate barometer because they have a legal requirement to provide it.
As I said.
So what I'm saying is most reports on the revenue side are crap.
As I said when I started this conversation, that if I was able to actually look at the numbers, I might come up with different conclusions. But they, the definitive article I read, again, it came out, this is 3-4 years ago. Somebody actually had a pretty good idea, or claim they did, of the revenue in all these big games. And the Irish were right up there, by the way. But Texas, they had their net as more than Southern Cal's revenue. Because they were the first, they somehow managed to put a TV thing together. It was intrastate because Texas is a big state. They were able to do really well, even in like baseball and stuff. You know, they were able to get the other sports on there and get pretty good ratings. So they were the first with this private network, and whatever it was, catapulted them, according to this article, way ahead of everybody. In other words, it wouldn't appear that they would need to change conferences to make money, is my point here. It wouldn't appear that way. Now, whether they're changing conferences because they have a problem recruiting people to the Big 12 and they want to be number one, that's possible because they got such egos down there. But, I was stunned when I thought they were doing it for money, because I thought they were so far ahead of the pack that they were making more money than Alabama now. Maybe that's wrong. It's a little dated information. And by the way, I didn't get a chance to audit it. And you're saying that it's really wrong. Well, okay. I mean, I guess
well,
that's possible.
I'm saying we don't really know.
We don't really know. Okay.
And I see this on a regular basis when you will see the revenue reports. You will see someone write up an article about it, and then when I go look for the source and I see the numbers and I go ahead and look at the Title IX reporting, which is publicly available, that's where they got their numbers, and I know it's wrong. I know it's not accurate, let's put it that way.
Well, the numbers when I saw them were startling. It was like, you know, Slippery Rock 20, somebody else 21, somebody 15, Notre Dame 30, Alabama 35, and Texas like 60. I mean, when it wasn't even, they weren't even in the same, it was like the men and the boys. And a lot of it had to do with them, because I think they were able to have their own TV station even with the leaks coming up. I mean, like I said, there was something weird.
They were. I think they might have given them, thrown them the bone of having one football game against one of their crap opponents early in the season. But other than that, their own network was really built around baseball and, you know, basically around the non-revenue sports. Notre Dame has something similar, the ACC network, the Big Ten network, they don't let one school have rights to anything, but they have that. And, before the ACC network came along, the Florida schools did really well with baseball on the Sunshine Network, selling their rights to the Sunshine Network. So yeah, it's kind of been all over the place in terms of what the revenue model is. Actually, the Big Ten is, the SEC has the biggest football coverage contract, but the Big Ten overall revenue from all of its media sources is the top conference.
Well, where I'm heading with this is the Supreme Court decision, and I'm starting to get. Somebody sent me an email last night, one of the listeners, and I was reading it, and I'm going to have to get back to them, because it had to do with, with unintended consequences on some policy that the... Oh, you know what it was? It was somebody sent me a thing about Ken Langone, and he was talking about a lot of these decisions being made by government and the unemployment this and the money that's coming this way and the decisions of protecting people from the COVID and all this stuff. He goes, it's going to end up hurting the exact same people that they want to help. And my new theme, Kevin, is... Maybe not new, but my evolving theme is, for a period of like 40 years that I've been paying attention, when every single policy works against the people they allegedly want to help, I'm thinking they're not that stupid and the policy is designed to not help the people that they say they want to help. In fact, they really want to screw. Anyway, but
Well, and Tom, along those lines, before you, I don't want you.
I don't want to get off the college thing. Let me finish.
Don't have much time.
Let me finish the college thing for a quick second. This new rule from the Supreme Court, the unintended consequences are all these kids are now going to get paid by boosters through some sort of a marketing or some sort of a. They're going to come to work for PTI for $100,000 a summer to play football at Notre Dame, which I would never do, by the way. But that's what's going to happen. So if Rick Tallender wrote a book years and years ago about how, what a fiasco college athletics was and how, and his solution to the end was, at the end chapter, they said, okay, well, now they're going to ask me after criticizing for 30 chapters or wherever many was, what's my solution? He goes, go to like a European model. Say, let's have Notre Dame, Illinois, Indiana, let's just have these guys sponsor a sponsored professional football team. You don't make the kids go to class if they don't want to when it's a joke. Don't make like you're not paying them. Just pay them. And say, this is the Alabama professionally sponsored football team.
The book was called The 100-Yard Lie.
Yeah, The 100-Yard, I mean, just do it. I mean, we're not talking about.
Well, and part of his proposal was the compensation has to include a year of college for every year you play football for them.
Okay.
So
yeah.
there could be other compensation as well, but that way, if you get to the end of your football playing days, either at the end of, you know, when you're 22 or when you're 32, it doesn't matter. You can go back and you can go to school and it's covered. You can go when you're ready to go. Not when you have to go because you want to play football.
But this sounds like the NFL lining up against the AFL, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, this is really the way things are unfolding is all the NCAA's fault because they could have gotten out in front of all of this, all of the compensation issues, all of this early on, and instead they fought tooth and nail against. You know, what's right, what's equitable, and frankly, what's legal.
Well, does now Missouri, Iowa State, Colorado, Baylor, do they have to buy their way in now? Like you would if you had a new franchise?
Colorado's in the Pac-12.
And Missouri's in the SEC.
Okay, well,
Missouri's in the SEC, so some of those schools got their way. So, yes, when you're talking about Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, et cetera. Yeah, they're going to have to figure out how they survive, or do they just downshift and say, you know what, we're going to enjoy being in the lower level while the rest of you.
Well, you're talking about now. But you're talking about now
and live with the consequences.
But you're talking about getting a franchise into the NFL of football. Or the AFL, whichever one you want to pick first. Let's say the SEC is the
AFL.
Yeah,
it's minor league football. Tom.
Yeah, so why should
it's minor league football that has value, extra value compared to other minor league setups because it's tied to good old alma mater.
But you're if Missouri does that, I keep saying Missouri. Say if Iowa State does that, they're guaranteed profit. Why should they welcome them in? They should buy their way in like it's a franchise. It's a monopoly franchise.
Well, they probably should.
Now, are we going to give them an antitrust exemption, like we did? I mean, let's go the whole way. Why not just go the whole way here?
This is what happens when you don't get out in front of it and have somebody forward thinking with a plan, and you just fight to maintain the status quo.
The immortal words of my friend and board member, fellow board member of the CBWE, Jack Callahan: we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way.
And getting there fast.
S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures down 3. Kevin, thank you. We'll be right back. Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. On the board, S&P futures down a buck, NASDAQ futures down four, we were up, and then we went down, but of course, by the dippers, if you're down like $2, that's now a dip. Russell, how are you?
I'm good. I want to stick on talking about the Alliance, because I am totally fixated on all of this, because my undergraduate school, Memphis, they're praying somehow they can flip in somewhere, but my PhD school, Oklahoma State, is completely being hung out to dry on all of this.
Oh, they're out.
So I pay a lot of it. And then finally, I can see the NCAA headquarters from my office right now.
That's right, in Indianapolis.
I'll talk to them about this a little bit later on.
I don't think they're anywhere near in charge of football, even though they'll say they are.
Oh, I know they're not. That's one that completely got away from them.
My grandmother had a term for both Memphis and Oklahoma State.
Things don't look particularly good.
The term was the part that goes over the fence last.
Yeah. It was funny when you were mentioning Colorado and Missouri, I was jumping out of my skin. Because I was like, they were smart and went in different directions much
earlier. Yeah, they got ahead of it.
Well, they were originally Big 12, weren't they?
Yeah.
Well, they were. Yeah, you were absolutely right on that part. You subtract them from, you subtract two from 12, those two from 12, and you get 10, which is how many teams were in the Big 12 until recently.
Well, don't ever think that there's...
Well, Texas A&M left as well and went to the SEC, and then the Big 12 added TCU. They had to add some teams because Nebraska went to the Big 10, Colorado went to the Pac-12. I mean, it's the Big 12's been crumbling for a decade
now. Just as a piece of history, it used to be the Southwest Conference, and then there was the Pac-10, right?
And the Big 8.
No, it was the Big 8.
There was the Southwest Conference, and there were the Big 8.
Big 8.
Separate.
Yep,
and that's right. And Southwest was all the...
What was left over combined to make the Big 12.
Well, Southwest was all the Texas schools, right? It was
Texas A&M. And they kicked some Texas schools out. They kicked SMU out. They kicked Houston out. They didn't take them along for the newer conference.
And that's why the real big game every year was Texas Oklahoma, because Oklahoma was like the best team, them or Nebraska, in the Big 8.
Right.
And that was always a huge game. Did Texas always play Oklahoma Nebraska was another massive game back when they were good. So those were like big huge
games. That won't happen again.
Right, and now Nebraska has just become a joke. And
really,
Oklahoma Texas is still a big game, but Texas hasn't been a top 5 contender in a decade.
And they brought out how many
they're
coaches?
They're probably going to come in fourth in the Big 12 this year.
It's crazy.
Well, they've got...
Behind Oklahoma State and Iowa State.
Well, plus
of course, Oklahoma.
But they've got an alumni group. I'm not a big... What did John Wayne say? It's like every other Texican I've met or something. It's on to Glenn Campbell and True Grit. I'm not a big fan, But how many coaches have the alumni bought out of these huge deals down there? Like three in the last 10 years?
That's crazy.
They're on their third right now, which is kind of funny. But so the Alliance is nothing more than those guys saying they're going to start coordinating scheduling. Well, they're stuck with their football scheduling several years out, so an adjustment. In fact, they thought about doing this a while back, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, but they thought it would take almost a decade for them to, you know, play out what they've already contracted to do. But the other part of it, and the reason that it's somewhat important, is the NCAA, which has been behind everything, is trying to play catch-up, and they're actually having a constitutional convention to pretty much rewrite a lot of the college sport rules. And you've got 41 schools that are now like a voting block on, you know, and they can do some things that maybe are more in more their interest and less in the SEC's interest. Another thing is they were working on the college football playoff thing, and they had laid the groundwork for changing the college football playoff. And what they said was they were going to go socialize it, which meant they were all going to go back to the school and talk to alumni at games and see how people feel about it, and then come back and talk more about the college football playoff. Well, the SEC, the commissioner of the SEC was on that panel. In fact, he was in that working group with the commissioner of the Big 12, and they were secretly working with Texas and Oklahoma. So a week after those meetings ended, you know, the SEC kind of surprised everybody and basically was poaching Texas and Oklahoma. So I think beyond, you know, seeing the SEC getting a little bit more powerful, I think they're actually pretty peeved that this guy was setting up the college football playoff for a way that benefits the SEC more when they include Texas and Oklahoma in the conference. So I think that's part of why the other commissioners are
We don't want to view somebody who's like close to the action and somebody who's a professor. Does anybody have any idea of how much more gambling? How can I put this? How can I say this correctly? The gambling on a playoff game is obviously higher than on a regular game during the season.
Oh, but, yeah.
But then my question is, how much higher? If gambling got involved, we're going to find one of these gambling firms, like, buying an NFL team one of these years. I mean, we're down that road. Or a baseball team. I mean, our morals are getting so far out there, we don't have any anymore. But in one man's opinion. But I guess my point to Mr. Weber is, if we had another round of playoffs, and say four more games, would that equal the handle on, like, all the other games on, like, a crappy week?
It would go beyond just that. You know, people go to Las Vegas on the Super Bowl weekend and they bet on the games, but then it also increases revenue in a lot of other places at the same time.
Well, my question is, and I don't think we're there yet. Let's assume these guys just don't want to play these kids, you know, 25 games a year, which I wouldn't make that assumption, by the way. I don't think they care what happens to any of these kids, to be honest with you, on some level.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure on a personal level they do, but, I mean, really? But I guess my point is, how far, Maddie, would you say, because you're our expert on this, at what point would the colleges be willing to give up one game for another round of playoffs? I mean, is it anywhere close to that yet? I'm thinking it isn't, but what do you think?
I wouldn't think it is either, because there's only in the four-team playoff that they've had so far, there's been, what, six teams that have participated in it total or something like that? It's the same teams every year. So if you're one of the other 115 teams, why the hell would you want to give up a game?
Okay, but...
Exactly.
What I'm searching for is this is becoming more and more the opiate of the people.
College football? Oh, I disagree. I think people care less and less about it.
Okay, well...
I do, too.
That's the answer I want to hear.
I think we're... That's part of where I was kind of going with all of this and why I wanted to stay on the topic. You know, what the most popular sport is in America over decades, it rotates. You know, everybody was, and for various reasons, and there's no reason that everybody's going to be fixated on college football, especially when they keep moving teams around and you lose the, I mean, they lost the Texas Tech A&M thing for a while. Now it's going to come back, but you lose Nebraska versus Oklahoma. You know, messing around with something that has a little bit of nostalgia around it, a little bit of Americana around it, ends up sanitizing it to a point where people don't get excited about it. And I think a great example of a sport that's getting it back is baseball. You know, I remember when they went on strike in the early 90s, I went to an Atlanta Hawks game. I was living down there, and they were giving away Braves tickets, and when they announced, like, a prize was going to be Braves tickets, everybody booed because it was coming off of the strike year.
And the Braves were damn good then.
So yeah, with the name, image, likeness thing, you're going to have more. You know, are you going to have every college football team have players that are out there in our face all the time? They're going to overkill us with that stuff.
Well, it may not seem like it, Russell, but once in a while, there's actually somewhat of a method to my questioning. And by the way, both of you guys, especially Maddie, knows way more about this than I do. So I'm not arguing. I'm trying to find an answer here, and I'm learning from you guys. But I'm trying to find what are the trade-offs? I mean, what are we really looking at if you put a pen to paper? I mean, are we willing, if there is some sort of limit on how many games you make college kids play, which I'm sure if you're a coach...
What do they play now? Is it 11 or 12 regular
season? I think it's 12, season. And then you've got... Well, it's... No, I think... Well, and then you've got...
I think it's 11 regular season, and then either a bowl game or...
Well, there's a Big Ten championship.
I'm talking about for the majority of the teams. Yeah. So if you're talking, if there's 120 teams or whatever it is right now, it changes up and down, 117 or something like that. You know, there's for the overwhelming majority, call it, you know, 85 teams, you're playing 11 games, right?
Well, I'm gonna check. I'm gonna look at the Notre Dame schedule right
now. Yeah, about there's so many freaking bowl games now. It seems like almost half the team. If you only have to have just over a 500 record to make a bowl game.
Irish are playing 12.
Sometimes they're letting 5 and 17 slip into a bowl game. You got to assume there are enough bowls that 60 teams are playing in them at least every year.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's very rare they get to...
So you play the 11, you could play your championship game, and then you play your bowl game. That's 13. And then if you make the playoff, you can play up to 14.
Guys, before you go too much further with this 11, they're playing 12.
Are they playing 12?
Yeah. They Maddie, we covered this.
Yeah, so it's
3-4 years ago.
So it's 12 now. So they're playing 12 regular season. So I mean, same thing. So call it 60 teams are playing 12. That's it. The other 60 teams, like Russell said, are playing in a bowl game. So they're at 13. Now you have like 20 teams, right, that are maybe playing in a conference championship game.
Yeah.
Or would that be 12 teams that are playing in a conference
12.
Championship game?
Probably 12.
So now you got 12 teams that are at 14 games. Now, if you go into a playoff situation, you have four teams that could play 15 games, and you have two teams that could play 16 games. Is that essentially where we're at here?
Yeah, and we're dying to go another round.
You got to take the bowl game away from them because they don't play in a bowl game; they play in a semifinal. So I think it gets to 15.
Okay, so the max would be 15.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you're the majority of the teams, or at least half the teams, are playing 12. And then you're playing, the rest of the teams are playing somewhere between 13 and 15, which is a lot. It would be tough to add more than that.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL, you're playing 17 regular season now and 3 preseason, so they're up to 20. But we saw this preseason, none of the quarterbacks are even playing in the preseason, let alone the running backs and the wide receivers. So it's like they're not even playing in the preseason games now. Might as well get rid of them. So they're at, you know, they're at 17 and then playoffs for the 12 teams that make the playoffs. I think they're probably at the top. So, but I don't think if I'm one of those 65 teams that only plays 12 every year, I don't want to give up one of my 12.
Well, it would
decimate because there's a lot of revenue sharing for conferences. The conferences where maybe one team goes to a bowl, it makes the disparity of wealth even worse.
Well, what is the
if you do that?
But the numbers. I mean, I would think, Russell, if you were going to give this project to one of your students, you'd have to get a pretty good idea. What are the percentage for the average school versus TV revenue versus live gate? I mean, if somebody joins the SEC.
Yeah, and you said give your students. I'm working on this.
Okay. What I'm saying,
and I'm working on it from the angle of what happens with the distribution of wealth when you get one of these major conference realignments, and is it good or bad for the schools that, I mean, you always move up when you're switching conferences. Has it been good for Nebraska? Has it been good to join the Big Ten? Has it been good for Missouri to join, you know, the SEC? You know, heck, they're geographically, if I cost them more to travel around the SEC now, you know, I know the TV revenues are not that much different. The TV distribution, when it comes down to it, there's about a $15 million difference between, I think the Pac-12 is the lowest one, and the Big Ten may be ahead of the SEC. I don't know what the attraction is for Texas and Oklahoma. I really don't. I mean, they basically could just dictate the terms with the conference that they were within. Their revenue boost might be, let's say, $10 million when they're part of the SEC as opposed to when they were part of the Big 12. But Texas has struggled in the Big 12. Oklahoma has dominated it. Oklahoma is not going to dominate the SEC, and it's going to be probably harder for them to get their team into a football playoff, especially if they don't expand it now because the other conferences are mad. And this could actually be a peak of their brand.
Well, I mean, there has to be something to do with it.
They're going
to
get diluted with with the Alabama and the Florida and everybody else.
Russell, it has to have something to do with recruiting. I don't want the single big...
I have never bought that one. I really haven't. And if the recruiting thing is part of... And that's probably something... I got to go find another college student to work on something now. Does Texas A&M get more players from Florida now than they did when they were part of the Big 12? You know, be that sort of thing. But I've never really bought that. That was an argument that everybody was positive on, and I'm switching sports, but when DePaul got into the Big East, it was like, oh, great, we're going to get all these East Coast players. And I don't think that happened.
No, it
definitely didn't.
Definitely
didn't. Nebraska fans still believe that's why they've sucked in the Big Ten is because they lost their recruiting foothold in Texas. Because when they were in the Big 8 and the Big 12, and they were playing a lot of those schools, Texas, Oklahoma, schools like that, they were promising kids, mm-hmm. You're going to get to play against Texas and Oklahoma who didn't recruit you. Well, in the Big mm-hmm. 10, obviously, they couldn't do that. And in the Big 10, no one cares about Nebraska. So they claim that it's real. But I'm with you. I don't know that it is.
Well, a lot of the Notre Dame shtick is that no matter what part of the country you're in, your mother can watch you play every game. That's a big deal.
They're on TV all the time.
And the SEC can do that now with their CBS national game that they have every week.
Yeah.
You know, they're losing that game.
ESPN's
taking that over.
Yeah, ESPN's taking that over. That's going to kill that.
Yeah.
Because
it is going to kill that. Because it's going to get diluted in all the other ESPN games.
Yep.
And ESPN denies it, but you cannot tell me that they are not somewhat behind moving Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC because the Big 12 contract is a split contract between ESPN and Fox.
Interesting.
Whereas
yeah.
SEC is all ESPN.
Well, there's a lot of places. I mean, Russell, you're the professor. If we were going to do a full analysis of this, I would say it would take us a real long time, and I think it would have to... we would have to get a lot of numbers, like Kevin says, are not out there because the Title 19 is the stuff that's out there. I mean, the Irish will never tell you how much you have to pay to get into the ticket lottery, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not going to tell you that. I mean, the Ohio State is never going to tell you how many I happen to know.
So how much did you have to pay?
I'm kidding.
I know you're
no,
not.
No, but it's, I'm going to say it's $250.
Okay.
Maybe more. A minimum donation. And if you really want to get a ticket, you better give them more. And if you want a parking pass, you wanted the Soren Society used to be $1,000 a year, now it's $2,000 or something. So it's a real number. I mean, it's a lot of dough. I mean, what did my buddy Dak? He had a season ticket holder. I mean, there's a interesting interesting quick story if I keep names out of it. Anywhere there's a person that everybody would know from TV in Chicago, and happened to have the same name as his father. Okay, Irish family. So the father had season ticket at Notre Dame for in the 50s, you know, or early 60s, when actually they wanted people, the guy who bought the ticket, you were doing them a favor instead of the other way around. Back in the good old days. So they've had season tickets for forever. And all of a sudden, well, the guy's name was George, and the son's name is George. And the thing went to the same. Well, Notre Dame started to figure out that even though the checks are coming in, that these people have to be dead. So we're not getting any money out of dead people. Now, just selling the tickets is nowhere near enough, of course, if you're the Irish or anybody else. So now they said, okay, we don't know if you're dead or alive, but for the next 10 years, we want, like, 20 bucks a ticket per game just as a, you know, because we need new goalposts or some BS they threw at him. So my buddy was now getting the tickets as an in-law. I think he sent him a check for like $40,000 for 10 years or something. Some huge number. It was 20 or 30 or 40. I mean, in other words, you can pay us, I think the story was you can pay us $4,000 a year, like $1,000 a seat per year. But oh, by the way, that number might go up over the next decade. So if you want to lock it in, if you want to lock it in, we want like $40,000 today. You know, so he did. So I mean, you'd have to get into all these little nuances. Now, Kevin, he's probably still listening. Kevin and the late Bob Golden, guest of the show, still miss Bob every day, every week. Kevin and Bob used to go, they wanted to do a Notre Dame game away. The Notre Dame game was always expensive, so they would buy the season ticket from wherever they were going. It might actually cost like the same price as the Notre Dame game. So they got season tickets for Florida State one year for like $200 or $500, whatever it was, $400 for the entire year. For good seats. So they went to the Notre Dame game and they donated the rest to some charity in Florida. So many schools have like 40,000 students that pay $10 a ticket and they take up 40,000 of the seats. Well, Notre Dame's only got, 8,000 or 9,000 students, so the other 71 are like seriously paying. So you gotta go through sort of every one of these things. Now, Ohio State, even though they have a boatload of students, the game I went there's a lot of people that have their tickets that I think must be donating. I know the family member, well, so far away of a family member that I just know about them. I never came near there any of their money. They sold some .com place and they gave a $35 million number back when you could like build a building for $35 million to Ohio State, and they've got one of the skyboxes. So I don't know if every skybox has a $30 million price tag on it. And so to try and get a feel for all this dough, and like Maddie says, you guys know more. I don't know at what point that college football is, willing to go with more of, say, 8 more playoff games that get huge TV revenue, Maddie's right. They've gone down in their.
I think they're going down in popularity, personally.
Well, but now, is the gambling another tick up, though, Maddie?
Could be.
I mean, if you can bet every 5 minutes, then whether the guy is gonna fumble on the next play. I mean, is this going to become a casino event countrywide? Nobody even care who. I'm saying somewhere along the line here, these guys must know these numbers. I would think they would.
Yeah.
And someday, I mean, there's going to be a trade-off. I mean, I don't know, between 10 playoff games and 100 regular games, because you find that on the playoff games, $100 million is bet on them, and the other games, $2 million is bet on them. I'm saying there's a lot of variables in the pie now that didn't used to be there. I mean, it's kind of my conclusion on this, but
I just don't see them taking games away.
I don't either. I mean, because I got to believe the live data.
But the problem is, the larger schools have a disproportionate vote within the NCAA. It's not like a one school one vote type thing. So the big conferences that would benefit from an expanded playoff, they could actually push that through. There'd be the lower tier schools would be kicking and screaming, but I actually think that could get put. I mean, I don't think it would, but I think it could.
Do you think Ohio State and Alabama would give up when the place is jammed? Do you think that it would 100,000 people? You think they would give up a home game for a playoff game?
If the revenue offset was enough to compensate for losing one home game a year, because they would, probably lose one home game a year. They probably would.
But they should.
And, you know, they could put a really happy face on it and say, look, these guys are scholars. So we're going to take one game away so they can spend more time in the classroom.
But right now, Maddie, help me here.
They bust out laughing while they were saying that or afterward?
Well,
and the funny thing is, I say in the classroom. I think a year or two ago they talked to the quarterback at LSU when they were having a really, really good year and asked him what it was like being on campus. He said, I take all my classes online. I'm not walking around campus and everybody coming up to me.
Well, can't blame him.
Well, would Ohio State be willing to give up a home game? I'm thinking absolutely not. But now the question is, would the powers to be, they get a week or two away on the school in the 747 drinking, as my cousin who went to a ball game in the 50s said, all I know is we were practicing in bed at 10 o'clock without any booze and all the hangers-on ate shrimp and drank booze on Colorado for a week. They had a great time. We didn't. Plus, we lost. You know, so, I mean, there's all these little variables in here. I can't imagine Ohio State. Now, Manny, I think they have this. Right now, the Big Ten or whatever the hell they are shares the bowl revenue down the line, right? And the only thing that the school that goes gets is the $5 million or whatever it is to bring all your sleaze bags on a plane and basically feed them and drink them all week, right?
And yeah, the marching band and your that whole crew.
Well, didn't Colorado go to the Orange Bowl one year and they spent the entire amount? It was a big
deal. I remember reading
something
like
that. Oh, yeah. There are schools that lose money on bowl games.
Well, but I'm saying they go.
And Memphis has gone to some pretty low-tier bowls, and I know there are instances where they didn't take the band.
Well,
because it was the difference between a profit and loss on playing in that last game.
Well, every team that goes gets, like, depending on the bowl, 2 to 5 to 10 to 20,000 tickets you have to sell. Remember the one year where everybody was trying to buy the tickets for Northern Illinois, Maddie? Because nobody in Northern Illinois wanted to go to Florida.
Yeah.
And didn't the state end up buying them? And then give them out to the students or something? Somewhere.
They did buy a block of tickets and give them to students and got buses to take some students down there.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Because you have to sell. I mean, it's, you know, if the Irish go to a bowl, you know, they're gonna make you, like, pay to get in the lottery, but in fact, the Irish have to sell them. Right? So if you're not a team that has people that have enough money to travel, or if you're in the, you know, the Seabiscuit Bowl out in some place in the middle of nowhere where it's snowing and you can't get people to go there, you still gotta buy the tickets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you lose money in the bowl game, Russell.
Bowl games aren't, and maybe that's why they want to have more playoff games.
Maybe. SPP is down one. NASDAQ is down 10. Very slow this morning so far. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are unchanged. Unchanged. Boy, how many times a month do we say that, Matt? Like, never? S&P and NASDAQ futures down 4. Dow futures down 6. Very quiet so far this morning. We were kind of quiet yesterday. Well, I know. Look, we were up 30 in the Dow. We were up 6 in the S&P list and 77 in the NASDAQ. So it was quiet. Not like the day before. We had a huge rally. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 26.2%, the FTSE up 13.2%, and the CAC round up 15.2%. So they're 2% across the board. They're one the other way. Nikkei down 7. Man, these guys have been like 1 and 2% now for almost every day, and now they're unchanged today, damn near. Shanghai up 25.7%, Hang Seng down 34.1%. Guys, we got a little movement here, up 2 basis points in the 10-year, 1.31. The Bund is up 3.5 basis points to minus 0.44. Japan still hanging in there at positive 0.01. We've got oil up 51 cents, 68.05. Brent up 68 cents, 71.73. So back over 71 fairly comfortably on Brent. Natural gas down 2 cents, 3.87. RBOB up 4 cents, down 2.22. And we've got gold down 13 bucks at 17.95. Just can't hang over that 1800 number. Although we were there for a couple days. Silver down a dime, 23.79. Copper up 2 cents, 4.28. And we've got Bitcoin down 5.52, 47,601. So that's down like 3,000 points since Monday morning when it was over 50. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that crash on the outbound Stevenson at Kingery that involved a fuel spill. It happened about an hour ago, hour and a half ago. And crews are still on the scene doing a cleanup. There's also a second car crash right near 294 on the left shoulder in that same area. So expect significant delays with crews on the scene getting those crashes cleaned up. No issues on the Ryan I-57 or the Bishop Ford. We do have a crash down southwest near Joliet on I-80. Eastbound side just before Briggs Street, which is exit 134. That crash is blocking the left lane and causing delays on the eastbound side of I-80. Heading toward Indiana. Eisenhower, traffic building steadily. No accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Off the expressways, there's a crash out west. Roosevelt Road at Route 38 at School Street. And then just northwest of there, St. Charles Road at Columbine Avenue, there's a crash. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine. Temperatures rising this afternoon back into the upper 80s and low 90s with a lot of humidity after it cooled off a little bit after last night's storms. Right now it's clear and 73 going up to a toasty high of 89. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 110 today. Right now it's clear and 83.
In sports, White Sox snapped their three-game losing streak. They won at Toronto last night, 5-2. Cubs were postponed due to yesterday evening storms. They'll play a day-night doubleheader today at Wrigley, 120 Game 1, 530 Game 2. Diamondbacks lost to the Pirates, 4-2. Chief.
Think we had enough rain last night? I don't recall you predicting that.
There was a chance of some storms rolling in the evening, but it was still a relatively low chance at 6:30 in the morning, and then the percentages went up and up and up, and then all of a sudden it got dark around 5 o'clock.
How much rain did we get last night?
It was a lot in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, it was. The Tripoli was like Key Largo, Humphrey Bogart. Phil Murphy looks kind of like Humphrey Bogart a little bit.
Waiting out the storm?
We're waiting out the storm, yeah. It was pretty nasty. But Cub game got called by, essentially the, whatever. They were called before it was supposed to even go off, right? By 7 o'clock they called it. They had the tarp down and rain coming, and because there were guys that were in the Tripoli that were at the game, and they were there at 7 o'clock. So they must have been in the stands at, 6:15 or so?
Yeah, it must have. It started pouring right at 6. It got dark at about 5, because I got the dog out at about 5:30, and you could tell it was coming any minute, and then it just started downpouring at like 5:45 or 6.
I don't imagine he likes it much when you miscalculate and he's stuck in the rain.
Right. We try not to miscalculate. So we got in plenty of time, but you could tell it was coming, and then it lasted, I don't know, 2 hours?
Yeah. Especially like when you miscalculate and like the dog looks up at you like, what are you, an idiot? Because you know it's all your fault, right?
Of course. It is your fault.
I mean,
they can't open doors.
Yeah, well, Scruff, my old dog who's been dead for a while, he'd want to go out and the door would be like, there'd be like rain or snow or something. He'd stick his head out and he'd come back in. And like 15 minutes later, he's at you again, poking you. Scruff, it hasn't changed. And you walk out. Finally, like the third time, you like grab him and carry him down the stairs and say, you got to do something. but then he was supposed to change. You're supposed to have fixed it, right?
Right.
Now, we don't really have the power, but they think we do. Just saying. Russell, what did you think of the... why was I in the dark about many things? When did they say they were going to do Jackson Hole virtually?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Or no, you know what? Probably maybe a week ago. So I feel like I knew it last week.
Yeah, I think it was...
but it was pretty recent.
It was pretty recent. I think it was maybe even over... It was either over the weekend or maybe Friday of last week. It was pretty late scratch.
I'm really bummed because the side conversations that I have every year at Jackson Hole are the highlight of my year.
I would say that... you and I sitting in a couple of the bar stools with guys just letting them sit around us and just engaging in the conversation, that'd be like the most fun we've ever had.
Oh yeah, that'd be a blast. I do think the unofficial talks that go on, I actually do think it helps with monetary policy, where they all get to, they all go on hikes and other things together where they really are just interacting with each other. And for better or worse, I think global monetary policy probably benefits from Jackson Hole every year. And they'll be missing out on that part of it this year.
Why am I thinking that these guys are so far in over the top? Now they're, in my opinion, they're pushing money at people before they go on the air to make them look good.
I actually think that for the first time, I said this yesterday when I got a question in class, I think for the first time in my career that the voting members of the Fed and the chair of the Fed have very differing opinions. I don't think it's totally coming out, and they try to come across as unified when they make statements. But if there's one thing that I think would have leaked out of Jackson Hole is how some of the other Fed presidents feel about current policy relative to Powell, and if they're, what they try to do is have a unified front as much as possible and kind of get in line behind the chairman. But I think there's a lot of different opinions right now.
Well, I know what mine is, and I spotted the number last week on the, well, of course, I got an email from a listener yesterday saying, well, how many years ago they stopped giving us M3, then they stopped M1, just combined it with M2, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're not even going to, now we only get M2 monthly. How soon are they going to stop this federal balance sheet thing weekly? I mean, you know that's next. Because last week...
I would do that instead of publicly announcing that I'm tapering.
Well, you've got...
And then taper.
But the number... but you don't... They do whatever they damn well feel like. They don't do what they tell you. $130 billion a month, even if you stick with that number... Last week was 85, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot convince me that the big bulge before any week that there's going to be a lot of news out of the Fed, and not to mention the fact the first 2 days last week the market was in a, not a free fall, but it was down pretty heavy. You can't.
We had another bear market. That's 2 days down is a bear market.
Man. You can't tell me that these guys still aren't propping the market up and propping their own BS up. Mm-hmm. I don't know which is more important to them, but. I mean, what's the number? I mean, what's that going to be, $1 trillion in 12 weeks if you kept it up? No, they won't keep it up, but, you got to do more and more and more. It's like if you got a hole in your gas tank and the hole keeps getting mm-hmm. bigger and bigger, you got to keep putting more and more gas in to keep gas in the tank, right? I mean,
yeah.
I honestly don't understand what I do know that it's, and I was reading, mentioned earlier, Ken Langone is on record yesterday saying that the policy the Fed is pursuing and the administration, because they're together. The administration, there's no way on earth they would have a $3.5 trillion deal if they actually thought they were going to tax people or borrow that amount of money. I mean, they're clearly planning on printing half of it, at least, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So that to me is a dramatic loss of the discipline of, of whatever. I mean, how can I say this? The politician, the big deterrent on their behavior is the vote, right? But the deterrent, mm-hmm. The deterrent on spending money. How do you explain this in class? By the way, the deterrent on monetary policy is one thing. I know I'm skipping around here because I'm trying to get so much into this statement. Monetary policy is one thing. And the Milton Friedmans of the world argued about they tried to put more money in the system and, so they could pay some of the debt in Vietnam and stuff. That is almost like on a second grade level, Russell. I don't think that those people on the Fed in 1968, 72, those areas that were the predecessor to the big inflation of the 70s, I don't think those people actually wanted, and the congressman at the time, I'll say this 99% accurately, they didn't think that what they were doing at the Fed level and sneaking a little more money in the system, they didn't think that was a massive policy change or a change in how the world works. And when I say that, I'm going to say if you're a politician, you go back, if you would interview Everett Dirksen or Adlai Stevenson or any of those people, you go back to anybody, you say, okay, you guys want to spend... $1 billion that you don't have. I'm sure they're not, a billion was a lot of money to those guys. $1 billion that you don't have, how are you going to get it? They would say to you, I'm 100% accurate, they would say to you, well, we either have to go borrow it, which doesn't get us very far because we're just taking it out of somebody else's hand and we're spending it. Obviously, you get to spend it on what we want to spend it, what you want to spend it, so we gain a little bit there. And if you save any of it, we gain a little bit there. I mean, that is the bedrock of Keynesian economics, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or the other thing is we're going to have to raise taxes because we got to get it from someplace. So those were the two alternatives that I think those guys would have told you or me, you more than me because you're the professor. Now I honestly think that this evil third stepchild has gone in there. We'll just print it and spend it wherever we damn want, mm-hmm. please. And you know what, Russell? It's not just that we're doing it, it's entering the mindset. We're gonna have a budget deficit 2 years from now of $3 trillion. We don't care, we're printing two. And you know, mm-hmm. I don't think these guys, to a person, male and female, have any idea of the danger of where that's heading. And maybe don't care. But you don't understand what I'm saying here. It's not like they plan on taxing it, or they do. It's going to be 40 years down the road. Or we're not really borrowing it, because the second we borrow it, we go back and buy it back, right?
Right.
So, but I mean,
it's just like I can't remember in what context he said it, but Bernanke said it was okay because it's really just an accounting trick.
Well, but I think what you've educated the or not educated, and I use the name because A, she's attractive, and B, because she seems to like to talk a lot, the AOCs of the world, I don't think they get it, that eventually you're going to have to drop a tax on the same people you just thought you helped. And the tax is going to be more burdensome than the help you think you gave them.
I don't think most people in government really see that. That eventually it's all going to catch up. And, maybe it's just because they're thinking about everything in two-year cycles, in election cycles.
Well,
and that's not the time frame that you should be using to, manage things that have long-term implications.
Well, Russell, grade my paper here. If you did something really stupid, like, just increase the money supply all over the place, or if you just doubled it, like if it's a stock dividend, all right, walk into the Fed and you give me a Washington, you walk out with a Jefferson. For those that don't know, Jefferson's on the $2 bill. And you know what? I'm going to say, Russell, it doesn't do squat, right? Everything would just be indexed. Your salary would double. The price of bread would double. The price of a car would double. You wouldn't even notice it, other than the week it took you to get used to it, right? But that's not what's happening. It is absolutely not indexed. The person who was making 30 grand in 2000 is now making 37. I'm going to say that he should be at 60 now, easy for things to be even, and they're not. And I'm going to say that the average person who got a $3,000 check from government over the next 15 years is going to pay probably 10 more in taxes and just doesn't realize it yet. He's just happy he got the two.
But eventually somebody has to pay for all that stuff, and it typically is taxpayers.
But not even. The top guys are going to pay a little bit. And I'm not talking about the a guy who just happens to make a lot of money. I mean, he's stuck. I mean, if you get a $20 million bonus, like, who knows, Russell will get one of these years. I think you're just stuck on that. I don't know where you're going. I mean, maybe you can move to a different state and help yourself out there a little bit. But you're not dodging the 30 cents from the Fed if somebody gives you a $2 million check on December 31st. I don't know how you do that. I mean, if I did, I'd probably be a very wealthy tax attorney. But I mean, your corporations aren't going to pay. What are they down to, like 5% of all the tax paid? And they get bigger every year?
Yeah, but that they pay a lot of people, and that generates income taxes. So sometimes I think, you don't want to penalize corporations too much, but 5% ain't good.
What if I get a lot of money to I spread it around? I'm the best trickler you ever saw. I should pay less?
No, you shouldn't pay less, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying that, it's one or the other. I'm just saying that I feel like when people rag on corporations because they're not paying a lot of taxes, they kind of are. They're generating, incomes that people are paying the taxes on. It's just less direct, I guess.
Well, if they paid all the money out to the people, they wouldn't have any income, and I'd agree with you, but they don't.
Yeah, and employers, big employers, actually provide a function that is provided by mostly governments outside of the United States, and that's helping fund the healthcare system.
You're turning into Tom Shanahan right in front of my very ears.
No, I'm just defending. You're a big devil's advocate guy, so I'm flipping the script on you for a moment.
I'm going to say that whatever you and I go to Congress together, whatever we agree that a corporation, through debate, through honest assessment of the situation, whatever we decide they should pay, they should pay. I don't want them to say. I mean, I would
be a huge fan of flat, even taxes across the board.
Here's what I would do, and tell me where
and
I'm wrong.
Throwing a consumption tax in there to get more money from the rich fall.
How about something real simple for corporations? And by the way, I'm stealing this from the long dead Milton Friedman. Make the taxes across the board the same. If everybody pays 30%, corporations should pay 30%, and they get to deduct the dividends, so people don't have to pay them twice. So if they send you and me a check for $20,000 that we have to pay dividends on, they don't have to pay them on or pay taxes on. Why should they have to pay twice? I've been against the double taxation of corporations forever.
Companies pay taxes on income before they distribute dividends.
I understand that. What I'm saying is that they should pay the same rate as people, since the Supreme Court says that they are people, right? So in other words, if your maximum number is 30%, the corporation should be 30%. But oh, by the way, if they send you a check, they should be able to deduct what they sent you as a dividend from their income that they have to pay on. So they shouldn't have to pay twice.
No, double taxation is not going to go away in dividends for sure.
Well, I'm saying in a perfect world, that is what
you're saying. It's good. I think in a perfect world, you eliminate as many ways as possible to get a tax break, and you just have a flat number for everybody.
Except for the fact that
and if you did that, if you just had like a flat number, which I know is damn near impossible for a company like GE that employs more people than a small city. But if you had a flat tax across the board, think about the cost savings to big companies.
Well, the problem
is always looking for ways to get around, saving their taxes.
The reason these companies get so big is because they don't pay any dividends out. The reason why they don't pay any dividends out is because they get taxed twice on the dividends. So the Warren
but they don't get taxed twice on the dividend. The shareholder theoretically
correct.
Gets taxed twice
but it,
on
but
the
it's
dividends.
it's the reason why the Warren Buffetts of the world can drop this level of BS on their shareholders. Why we never share any of this money, and they're too big because of it. So get an excuse away from them. I'd much rather see everybody getting a check from Microsoft or Apple than I am these guys sitting around and trying to find another company to buy and get even bigger.
I can't completely argue with that one, but theoretically, if a company feels like they can do better with the cash than you could invest again in the market, they should hang on to that cash.
Right, but that
now Microsoft, to their defense. And this was several years ago, they had so much cash, they paid a 10% dividend.
Okay, but what I'm saying
is... And I think that's what... because they're like, we're so freaking big, there's nothing that we can go out and buy that will provide the synergies to increase our growth, so they return the capital to shareholders. And I do think more companies should do that.
Okay, but the this is when I was in school, long before you were a professor... The formula always was that if you felt you could invest the money more wisely than your shareholder, you made the investment instead of sending them the money, which is what you just said.
Yeah.
If you introduce double taxation into that, then you're going to say, I only have to be 60% as smart as my shareholder. There isn't a CEO on earth, unless you're AT&T where you paid a dividend for 100 years. There isn't a CEO on earth that doesn't think he can do better than a shareholder with 60% of the money. It definitely screws up the equation, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying there shouldn't be double taxation, in my opinion.
I think a flat tax across the board, I think there should be double taxation, period.
Why?
Because that's just one of the many things that starts to muck things up.
You say there shouldn't be. Should not be.
No, I think it should remain the way that it is right now.
That a company...
Company makes money, they pay a flat 10% tax. But in conjunction with
why should they pay
level playing field for every company and every person?
So why should they pay 10%? Why should they pay 10% if you're paying 30%? The Congress just said that.
No, that's not. I'm not saying that I would pay 30% and they'd pay 10%. I said we should come up with a flat. You know, here's what you pay on what you make. Period. And it doesn't matter if you're Google and you make $100 million or you're me and you make $10,000.
Well,
I pay 10%. They pay 10%.
All right, let's have a test.
And if they choose to send me a dividend, I have to pay 10% on that as well.
But you're down to 10. But the 10% is that's you and I being 25 again.
The problem with all the different little what ifs is you start to bring a what if in, and then they amend the tax code a little bit, and then you get something that is so tall I could dunk standing up by standing on it.
Let's talk about this next week. You're the professor, and I'd have to come into your class and argue against you on this. And I think I'd get a few votes from your guys.
You think?
I think so.
Yeah, but I control the grades.
I was just going to say that.
Comes back to the compensation, and I've got that part.
Everybody who everybody votes for Chief gets a flag. not even a hook, a flag, as I used to say. Russell, thank you. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 10, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.